We want to talk about five essentials for generational discipleship in your church, and we'll cover a few resources that can help. Can everybody hear me okay? My little clicker doesn't seem to be working, so I'll have to go old school and click a button here. So we want to talk about how to strengthen the church side of the church and home equation. Now, when you listen to anybody from D6 very long, we talk a lot about the home side, because we really believe that God's original discipleship plan was for parents to be the primary spiritual leaders, and they're the ones that are to help disciple their children and get them on the path of loving and following the Lord. But there is a partnership, and the church definitely is a part of that. And so we're talking about how to strengthen the church side of that. In Deuteronomy chapter 6, very familiar passage. When we read that, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might. And these words that I command you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children." So it seems that it takes a bit of a shift here. Even though God's addressing a nation, He kind of hones in on parents, that you shall teach them diligently to your children and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise, basically as you're going through doing life together. "And you shall bind them as a sign on your hand. They shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorpost of your house and on your gate." So there you have a biblical precedent to hang all the cute little signs in your house that say faith, grace, and things like that. So parents clearly is who God had in mind when He gave this. But it was also addressing a nation. And we know that Israel was intended to be a theocracy. Well, we don't live in a theocracy now, and our nation's probably not going to give us a lot of help in trying to disciple our families. And so that really kind of shifts to the church then, kind of step into that supporting role of helping. And that's what we're looking at today. You see, home is the primary place for discipleship, but the church usually initiates any strategy that's involved and provides support for discipleship. That's usually the case. Usually it's the church that initiates discipleship. Now, you may have some parents who are very proactive about discipling their children. They are probably the exception. You know, here I am, 61 years old. My girls are grown, and I'm thinking, I wish that someone had told me some of this stuff, you know, back when I was in those early parenting years. But you know, the odd thing is, you know, Deuteronomy 6 has been in the Bible the whole time. And it's just one of those things we've just kind of overlooked. We've just kind of skipped over. We've got busy doing church as we always understood church to be. And we've kind of shifted some roles around, and the church has picked up the primary role of discipleship, but that's not how God intended it to be. God wants parents to be involved, but He wants the church to kind of come along and push and nudge and initiate and encourage and equip and help families to be able to do what they need to do. Parents may be passionate about discipling their families, but the church supports them with equipping and with strategy. And so we have to understand how to leverage the abilities of the church, especially in our local context. Within any local church, you've got to look and evaluate at what you've got to work with. And so you start thinking about the people that you have in your church. You look at the talents they have, the spiritual gifts they have. And so you're trying to figure out, what do we have in our local context that the church can bring and help parents with? We have to recognize what the church brings to the table. The church is not, and we have to be very careful, the church is not the know-it-all, one-stop shop for training. You see, that's kind of how we got into the mess that we're in now, where parents just say, "I'll take my kids to the church and the church will disciple them." Because we've kind of given that, you know, that impression that, well, the church is the professionals, we have staff, we have people that are trained, they know how to do that. You bring your kids to us, we'll take care of everything. And parents have kind of been lost in the mix. And so we've got to be very careful that we never imply that the church is the expert. We don't play that card. But we do have to recognize what the church brings to the table. And you need to do an assessment of everything that your church and your people can contribute to the discipleship ministry in your church. And you know what you've got to work with. And so the church is uniquely equipped to provide leadership, training, resources, relationships, mentoring, collaboration, accountability, motivation, and so much more that the church can bring in and support parents with. See, parents, most parents, they don't have all this at their disposal. But the church can help them with these things. All this along with the spiritual support, the edification, and the prayer power of the congregation. So the church definitely brings a lot to the table in this equation of discipleship. And we want to leverage that and use it to the best that we possibly can. And so the church's responsibility in discipleship is simply equipping families to be involved in discipleship, or encouraging families to be involved in discipleship, and equipping families to be better at discipleship. You know, it's great to get parents going, get them started, but we don't want to leave them there. We want them to continue to get better at what they're doing. And so that's the church's role. You can kind of condense it down two simple things. Encourage families to get involved in discipleship in their homes, and then equip them so that they can be better at discipleship. As ministry leaders, we need to help parents get on the path of generational discipleship, equip them for the journey, and help them along the way as they go. And this does not happen without a plan and passion in promoting it. So there again, the church can help bring that to the table and work with parents. And so we have to really recognize everything we bring from the church. See, the church provides the car, the fuel, and the pit crew. And the parent or the individual is the driver. The church doesn't need to drive discipleship in your home. The parent does, the individual does. So the goal of the church is to get our people prepared, get them in the driver's seat, and get them across the finish line. That's what we're trying to do. And the church can help families and parents win in discipleship. The church serves as a facilitator. There are five essential effective for an effective church strategy, five essentials. And the church kind of is a facilitator in doing this. That's what the church brings to the table. Now, I want you to notice, facilitate is to make an action or a process easy or easier. And we're talking about discipleship in the home. And so when the church facilitates that, it means that the church is going to provide resources and training and help and encouragement and prayer to make discipleship in the home easier to do. Now, we would all agree that parents are pretty maxed out today in their responsibilities. They've got their kids involved in so many activities. They're busy. They've just got a lot of stress on them. I can say now, I'm in my grandparenting years, and grandparenting is a whole lot easier than parenting ever was. And there are a lot of reasons for that, but one of the primary reasons is I don't have the responsibility on my shoulders that the parent does. I'm not making a living. I'm not providing for them. I don't have to be the disciplinarian. And so it's a lot easier for the grandparent to kind of come in and just love them and spoil them and do all the things that we do like that. But parents have a lot on them. And we've got to help them and make it easy for them to really get engaged in generational discipleship in their own home. So the church is facilitating that. And again, notice these are action verbs. That means they're going to be encouraging, they're going to be enabling, assisting, expediting, advancing, promoting. All of these are verbs, they're actions. To facilitate means to make it possible, make it doable, and make it better. Think about the families in your church. If you don't help them, discipleship probably is not going to happen in their homes. It's probably just not. Or it's going to be a very feeble attempt at best. And so you just kind of bring it into the realm of possibility for them when you come along and encourage and support them. You make it doable. You give them some simple, easy steps that they can take, that they can get on the right path, and they can get moving toward the goal line. And you help them make it better. You don't just, it's not like Ronco where you just set it and forget it. I mean, you got to stay with them. You work with them. You go with them along the way, because not only do you want them to get started in the race, you want them to finish well in the race. So the church has got a lot of responsibility helping families and helping parents in discipleship. So again, we can boil it down to two primary responsibilities, the encouraging and the equipping. Just working with them, continuing to work with them, support them however you can. So let's look at the five essentials of an effective church strategy. Number one, right out of the gate, absolutely essential for an effective discipleship ministry in your church is pastoral vision, leadership, and involvement. And I'm here to tell you that I pastored for about 24 years before I went on board with Randall House. And I look back and I say, I didn't do this very well. Now, we had Sunday school, we had programs, and that was good. But honestly, I could have poured a lot more into that than I did. And on the other side of it, I clearly can recognize that. And here's how I understand it. If you go into the book of Revelations and you read about the seven churches, and it's just talking about the candle stands and everything, and most commentators agree that where they're referencing the angels, where he says, and to the angel say this or write this, that they're referring to pastors. Probably the only time pastors are ever considered angels. But here most commentators agree that he's referring to the angels, and in each case of the seven churches, and to the angel of the church in, and he gives the message. He gives the warning. He gives the correction, whatever. That makes me question, where does the buck stop? For me, that's an easy answer. It's the pastor. I mean, that's where the buck stops. Everyone in church leadership, your deacons, elders, church leadership board, whatever you have, may share in that responsibility. But the pastor is ultimately responsible for what's taught in a church, and if anything's taught in a church. It just boils down to the pastor. And yet so many pastors fall in the same trap that I was guilty of, and that is that we delegate this responsibility to a fault. Now, as a pastor, you're busy, you got to delegate. There's no question. But I was guilty of, I had good people, and it was, you take that and you run with it. And I was kind of checked out. I mean, I participated. I'd be in a class. Times I taught a class. But the church would have benefited so much had I poured a little more of myself into the discipleship strategy and ministry of the church. A lot of times the pastor just kind of removes himself and he lets people run with it. Again, you got to delegate. Pastor doesn't need to be doing everything. At Randall House, we've got this rule. It's called the 20-60-20 rule. How many of you ever heard of that? And so the way it works is Dr. Hunter may have, you know, we decide on there's an initiative we need to do or some project we need to do, and we'll decide who needs to head that up, maybe a team that works on that. And so Dr. Hunter will be very involved with that the first 20%, because that's where you're really working in your conceptual stage and you're trying to shape this and this is what it needs to look like and you're getting that kind of narrowed down. And so the first 20%, he's very involved with that. And then he lets whoever's assigned to that take it the next 60%. And that's where you have to get into the weeds and you've got to work out details and work on things like that. And you've got to bring the infrastructure in place to support whatever it is you're doing. And then the last 20%, we check in again with Dr. Hunter so that we can evaluate it, tweak it, fine tune it, get it where it's just what he envisioned it to be. But you see, he was involved a little on the front end and he was involved a little on the back end, but he had people that he could trust to work on the main part of it there in the middle. And a pastor could take that kind of approach too when it comes to discipleship in the church. He can make sure that he is speaking into that, he has the vision for that, and then he has good people that can work with it, but he's always checking in to make sure we're still following the right path with this and nothing has gotten off track. And that's what the church really needs from the pastor for discipleship ministry. There needs to be an emphasis from the top. And so a pastor needs to leverage his influence. Every head coach, I'm a big college football fan, every head coach has a staff of assistants who specialize in certain areas of the game. And they have certain responsibilities to make sure things are done and that different players, different positions are coached well for that position. But the head coach leads the program. I mean, there's no question who leads the program. The most successful head coaches know their program inside and out because they shape that program, and the program has their DNA and their thumbprint all over it. Now, I make no apologies. I am a Alabama fan. I know that doesn't get me any points with a lot of people. But I do look at the program. In any of your successful schools, you look at, there's a lot of them out there. You've got, you know, Georgia, reigning champion right now. They have built a program. And it's got Kirby Smart's thumbprints all over it. Now, he hires staff to take care of. You work with the quarterback, you work with the linebackers, but he built the program. And so that's what a pastor needs to do with discipleship in the church. It's your program. You know, you speak into it, you cast the vision, then you bring in good people, get the right people on the bus that they can run with it, and you always keep tabs on it that it's rolling in the direction that it needs to be going, and that helps the church tremendously. And there are natural leverage points for the pastor. And if a pastor's not using these, he's really missing out on a lot of great opportunities that can help him with whatever he's trying to accomplish in the church. Number one is his connection and influence in church leadership. I mean, most churches, they have pastor and deacon meetings, or either church leadership meetings, staff meetings, or whatever. Don't you want your leaders talking about and discussing what your church is doing in discipleship? Don't you want your leaders praying for the families in your church and how they're doing discipleship in their homes? So the pastor is uniquely positioned that he can bring that influence into the leadership of the church, and he's always directing that so that not only is he very involved, very concerned about discipleship and how you're supporting families, but he can encourage and he can sway all of the church leadership that they're going to share in that passion and vision. And that's so very important. Pastors are uniquely positioned to lead and influence in the thought and leadership of the church. And in most cases, the pastor leads the leadership of the church, and he's the leader of leaders in that setting. And so he can lead to emphasize discipleship, which makes a huge impact on the life of the church. His second natural leverage point is the pulpit. And we cannot minimize the importance of the pulpit ministry in a church. And so the pastor can do a CAT scan of the pulpit and how it's being utilized. And by that we mean, what are you communicating from the pulpit? What are you asking from the pulpit? What are you teaching from the pulpit? And when we say the pulpit, we simply mean the primary engagement with the congregation that the pastor has. Some guys don't use a pulpit, and that's fine. But you know what I'm talking about, the sounding that comes forth from the pastor in the church. So, what are you communicating and promoting from the pulpit? What are you raising awareness to? And what are you informing the congregation of? What are you asking from the pulpit? What are pastors encouraging their people to be involved in? Most pastors have no problem whatsoever promoting Operation Christmas Child, right? Great program. And if the pastor promotes it from the pulpit, more than likely the church is going to embrace that, and they're going to get engaged with it. Most pastors have no problem whatsoever promoting missions or a mission offering. We ask our people to give, and in most cases, the people will respond to what the pastor is asking them. And so we can do the same thing with discipleship. we can just really promote it, and we can ask people to be engaged and involved with discipleship. And what is the pastor teaching? Are we teaching on discipleship? Do we do sermon series on discipleship? Bible studies? Do we have special services designed for discipleship? We can bring biblical authority to bear on the subject, and the Bible has got a lot to say about discipleship. And so this is a natural leverage point for the pastor to use the pulpit. Now, we're not doing any disservice to it because we're going to be biblical in what we're doing. We believe in discipleship. The Bible teaches discipleship. And so the pastor can passionately promote that from the pulpit, ask people to be engaged with it from the pulpit. And then he also has his relationships within the congregation. Most of the church members have some rapport with the pastor. So the pastor should make discipleship a part of conversations that he has. The pastor, again, is uniquely positioned to personally ask, how is your discipleship going in your home and with your family? Now, he's not the only one that should be asking that question. I mean, you've got church leadership, you've got deacons. These are people that should be able to talk to people, come alongside of them. Not that you're, you know, really just coming down on them, you know, to grade them or something, but you put your arm around and say, hey, how's it going in your home? You know, how's it going with your kids? How's discipleship working in your home? In earlier times, one of the primary responsibilities of a pastor was to visit all the homes of his congregation to make sure that they were faithful in family worship and discipleship. You know, that's not a bad plan now. But the people expect the pastor to ask questions like that. So the pastor's, he's got an open door. You know, he's not prying. But he can just, you know, like when someone's coming out, you know, if you do that, when you exit, people come by, shake the hand, say, hey, how's things going with your kids? You know, I know your kids in high school now, a lot goes on in that time of life. How's things going? You know, if we ever need to talk, give me a call. The pastor can make the ask. And so that's a natural leverage point. The second essential is discipleship must be a big deal in the life of the church. Is discipleship a priority? I mean, you know what the priorities are in your church because it's what you focus all your attention on. It's what you spend money on. It's the thing that you give attention to. Is discipleship a priority? You know, most churches make missions a priority, and that's great. We should. You plan for it. You promote it. You preach about it. You're passionate about it. And in most cases, your people respond. Likewise, we need to make discipleship a priority. And we just continue to focus on that and encourage people to be involved. You got to make it famous. How many of you like Famous Dave's Barbecue? Anybody like Famous Dave's? There's a couple of us in here. I like it because on my birthday, I get a free lunch because my name's David. That works pretty good for me. But it's kind of fun when you go in there and, you know, your server comes around and they'll introduce themselves. Hey, I'm Famous Andy. And so you say, okay, Andy, what are you famous for? And then they'll tell you something about themselves, and it may not amount to much, and they may even make it up. But I mean, it's a fun little thing that you do, but that's something they played on Famous Dave's. And we want to make discipleship famous in our church. We want it to be something that people are talking about, that people are excited about. It needs to be something that is well known. Help our people understand there is something absolutely remarkable about discipleship, and then you make sure that you're doing it in a way that's remarkable in your church. And so discipleship needs to be a priority. It needs to be famous. Your people need to be talking about it. It needs to be the buzz in the church, talking about discipleship. Everyone connected to the church should know that generational discipleship is a big part of your church. And get this, if they know this, then everyone in your community is going to know this too. Don't you want your church to be known in the community as a place that, hey, they love families and they love people and they will help us? And if your people know this, if they know, hey, discipleship is a big, big deal in our church, then you rest assured your community is going to know that, and it may help you reach some of those people in your community. Third essential is you got to focus on families and homes. Think of how you can connect with them. Think of how you can serve them. Are there any challenges that your families in your community are facing? Any challenges the people in your church are facing? Any areas you can support them in? These are ministry opportunities. When you're trying to understand what does God want us to do in this community, if you can kind of wrap your head around the needs that are there, that's your ministry opportunity. And that's what you need to focus on. And they're always going to be tied to families and to homes. Think of families and home as a primary network hub of your ministry. They are the key to accessing the community around your church. Now, most churches have a prospect list. This is people we're trying to reach. You may have a prayer list, people you're praying for to come to the Lord. Visitation list, people that you want to check on. You think about your ministry opportunity list. But think of parents as a hub of a network, because the families in your church, they know other families in your community. They're engaged in sports activities through their kids. They're engaged in civic activities that are going on. Every family in your church has a network of family that reaches beyond your church. It's going to be all around your community. And so when you focus on families in your church, then you've got a hub of a network that you can begin to reach and try to work with and help. And so look at your families in your church as the on-ramp to your community. And they can help you tremendously make connections in your community. Be sure to make your discipleship ministry inclusive. And by that we mean push for 100% identification and engagement. Know your families. Someone in your church should be keeping a database of names, ages, birthdays, contact information. How can you connect with families if you don't have this information? Somebody needs to be maintaining a database of everyone that's engaged in your church. The better you know them, the better you can serve them, and the better you can engage with them and communicate with them. And so we want to push for 100% inclusion. Know all your people and encourage all your people to get involved as much as they can, but we don't want it to go so far as we give a sense of exclusion. You're going to run into this primarily with your young single adults. They're going to say, well, I'm not in a family. Well, everybody's a part of some family, and you want to make sure that they know they're a part of your church family. And so you want to reach with them, connect with them, help them. If you've got students, maybe they're in your area, they're going to college, they're away from their family, open your homes to them during holidays and other opportunities that your people can connect with them, because you want them to feel like they are part of the family of the church. And then the fourth is you rethink how you resource and structure discipleship. Rethink how you structure and support discipleship. There are a couple things that every church will do. We budget for discipleship. You know, I've sat in a lot of budget meetings. We're trying to figure out, okay, what are we going to put on this line item this year? And say, well, here's what we spent last year. Okay, that sounds good. Sometimes church may be feeling a bit of a crunch, and they start looking at what they can cut. And a lot of times, curriculum and discipleship resources can be a big line item, and they say, well, maybe we can trim there. As long as we can get paper plates and coffee cups, you know, but we can trim over here. So we need to be thinking about how we can bump our budget for discipleship instead of cutting. Plan to grow your investment. The money that a church spends on discipleship is an investment. Plan to grow your investment. Well, we also support it with personnel. We find and identify people that can serve. And I'll just tell you, it's far better if you let some ministries go, if you don't have somebody passionate about leading it. it's just better not to have the ministry than to have it just kind of faltering around all the time and never accomplish anything. Identify people that are passionate about discipleship or can become passionate about discipleship. You know, passion can be contagious. Build a team. Get the right people on the bus. Now, in a lot of established churches, that means there's some people that probably need to get off the bus. And that's always kind of a tricky little thing to work with. But try to pull people in, people that will be dependable, people that will be passionate, people that will champion the cause. Try to be pulling them in as much as you can, everywhere you can, and try to get it turned around going in the right direction. But be sure you find the right people to support your discipleship initiative. And then we have scheduling. Aside from the time that's allotted for groups and for classes, there needs to be time set aside for planning and for brainstorming and for training and just time for you to love on and serve those who are doing the work of ministry in your church. One of the hardest things sometimes is to get people to set aside an hour for training or just come out, let's have a planning session. It's hard to get people. People are busy. And that's why you need to go back. If you make discipleship really remarkable in your church, people are going to be more prone to want to be involved with that. And so this all builds one line upon the other line, so to speak. But be sure that you're not shortchanging yourself by not giving adequate time for planning and brainstorming and just loving on the people that are doing the work in the trenches. And be sure that you provide enough time in your group or your class settings that they can do justice to what they're trying to accomplish. And one thing, let me just say this, that be sure that in your classes, especially in your adult teachers, be sure that they know to reserve the last few minutes of that class when they have parents in the class, that they're going to talk about, okay, here's how we can take what we've discussed here and this is how we take it home. There needs to be some discussion on how you're going to do application at home. Coach your adult teachers to do that. When we talk about how we resource and structure, another thing that's very helpful, encourage your small group format rather than lecture-based classes. Now, most of us probably grew up in a church where the adults were all in one class and there was a guy stood up front and he gave us more like a lecture, almost like another sermon that we got. And that's great and fine, and that's good for a lot of people. But if you really want to get your people engaged, put them in smaller groups and encourage discussion. Get people involved and engaged and active in it. Don't just come and sit, but be actually engaged with the conversation of what's being talked about. It gives people a little bit more ownership in the group. A little sense of accountability is built up in the group. Small groups, it's easier to devote time to talk about that application, how we're taking it home and such. But small groups are always going to work better in your discipleship ministry in your church. And then consider having layers to your discipleship. Most churches, you've got corporate worship, and that's good, and we need to be plugged into that. And we can learn a lot through that, and that does help in our discipleship. Then you have Sunday school or some small group life groups that are going on, and that's also very important. That's good. That's the core discipleship initiative of your church. Then you can layer on top of that some discipleship groups. Some people call them D groups. Or you can have mentoring relationships within your church. These are where you get into like smaller clusters of people where you can develop a little accountability, become prayer partners and such. You can layer on elective studies from time to time. You want to have a study group of people get together. You want to have a book club, affinity-based groups. You may have a bunch of people in church like to play soccer. They could have a group that does soccer, has a little Bible discussion to go with it. But that's not going to be your core discipleship. You go back, you've got corporate worship, then you build your Sunday school or your groups, then you can start layering on these other discipleship opportunities. Each of these are important. Each of these should be promoted. And each of these serve to encourage personal engagement with God and His Word. Everything you're doing, you need to be ultimately encouraging people to be personally engaging with God and His Word. So that's important. different layers. And number five, evaluate and measure by the right matrix and measure what matters. Now, this is often just skipped altogether. What are you trying to accomplish, and how do you know if you're hitting the target? I mean, all of a sudden you just see all your people just become bubbly, you know, followers of Jesus Christ, and they're all excited. Are you watching for that to happen? Hopefully it does. But you've got to have a way of evaluating what you're doing and if you're being effective. Most often churches are going to count attendance, looking at participation, and they're going to be looking at what the offering is. Those are two numbers that every church follows. How many people came? How much is the offering? Well, what if we measured some different things? What if we measured things like Bible engagement? You know, do we know we are getting our people into the Word consistently? What about relational engagement? Do we know our people are having faith talks and spiritual conversations? How do we know this? When your people are consistently, instinctively, and intentionally doing these things, you're on the right track. But if you can't know that, then you don't know how to measure or evaluate very well. Don't trust superficial data like attendance and giving. Measure what gets you to your goals. Bible engagement, spiritual conversations, sharing your faith. These are the things that tell the story of if discipleship is actually happening or if we're just going through the motions. So, five essentials for an effective church discipleship strategy: the pastoral vision, his leadership and involvement. Discipleship must be a big deal in the life of the church. Focus on families and homes. Rethink how you structure and resource discipleship. And then evaluate and measure by the right matrix so that you can know if you're actually hitting the mark of what you're trying to accomplish. So let's talk about a couple of resources that can help you do that very quickly. Pastors are busy, and so we don't need to go badger the pastor. I mean, I used to just hate it when someone come to the office, and it'd usually be, you know, just before we're going to start the service. I've got my mind on other things. Hey, pastor, you know, have you ever thought about we need to be doing this? Now, that's a great idea. Can we talk about that later? You know, pastors are busy. Always work with your pastor. Don't try to circumvent your pastor. Support your pastor. Pastors are very, very busy. And we have to understand that and work with that. But also, most pastors are readers because they're reading up on theology. They're reading up on church leadership, things that they need to help them stay fresh and relevant in what they're doing. So maybe you could get them a book about discipleship ministry, a book that helps educate on here's how you can do discipleship, here's how you can support your families. DNA of D6 happens to have a church health assessment. Ask your pastor, say, hey, could we sit down and just work through this together? And it kind of gives you an idea of how well your church is doing in some key areas. Recalibrate, another great resource. We've got a lot of resources, not just Randall House, a lot of great books out there about discipleship. So we always think about the pastor as the one that, you know, he's always leading us, but sometimes it's good just to come up alongside your pastor and say, hey, I'd really like for you to do this with me. Let's do this book together. Let's talk through this. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. And it's just a way of introducing some things to him that may not be on his radar. It's not saying that he's doing anything wrong. It's just he's got so much on his plate trying to keep everything else going. Maybe you can help introduce him to some things. And so that can really help us, you know, with the pastor. When we're trying to get our people engaged and help our families, there is a simple resource that we provide, and it's called Parent Pages. And if you want to make discipleship a big deal in your church, you could take this simple one sheet of paper, and there's a lot you can do with that to really just encourage people throughout the church in discipleship. It's designed to go home, help families. This gives a family everything they need to start discipleship in their home. One sheet. And so there are so many ways you can use this, so many things you can do with this. But what it is it's pushing something out to your people, keeping it in front of them, and it's making discipleship a bigger deal in your church. And so we want to do that. Focus on families and homes. One way we can do that is by putting discipleship resources in their hands. If you're not using D6 devotion magazines, this is a great way to help your families. It gives them a devotion they can do every day of the week. They're all engaged in the Bible from elementary up through adult. You're on the same theme every week. And so the devotions that dad and mom are doing are going to be the same devotions their teenagers and their elementary kids are doing. And that just kind of sets you up to have the conversation at home. And that's what we're after, right? Great way to help families get engaged, support them. We want to rethink about how we're restructuring and everything. Be sure you're getting your teachers the resources they need. Again, you know, I strongly support D6 curriculum. Don't just get a teacher book and say, go get them. But give them something that will help them, a resource kit that's got all the reproducibles they need in it. It's got their teacher book in it, everything they need for the classroom experience. It equips your teachers. Don't shortchange your teachers. Give them what they need to do the job you're asking them to do. And then, of course, to measure what matters, we have a chart that's been developed. And it's kind of a take on the old attendance chart, if you will. But if you'll see, there's like a little silhouette of a person. Above their head is a little bubble. It's got FT in it. And then you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 to the side. Here's how this works. So if they are in their class or their group, they color in the head. That's good. If they did their devotions on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, they color in the little bubbles. On the weekend, they color it. If they've had a faith talk with someone during the week, they color in the head. Now, this is not used for judgment like, oh, Johnny, you only did devotions 2 days this week. That's not what you're doing this for. But this is a way to help you understand, are our people actually engaging with the Bible? And are they talking about it with anybody? And so if they could color in that they did devotions 2 days out of the weeks, but they also had a conversation with somebody about it, that's a win. That's a win. Mark that down as a win. Celebrate that. Talk it up with them, you know, and encourage them to keep at it and keep going. But it is a way of just measuring, are we really accomplishing anything with what we're doing here? We know what we want to happen. Are we doing things that can help our families get across the finish line with discipleship? And so these are 5 essentials for effective church discipleship strategy. We've got resources that can help you. We've got a lot more at our booth. We encourage you to come by and see what we've got, how we can help you. Any questions? Any comments?
Do y'all have anybody who can come and evaluate your system and help out on a one-on-one basis?
We have done some of that. It's kind of hard for us. You know, we've got a certain size staff, and going out is difficult, but I'm not saying that it can't be done. It works better for us if we have a group of churches we can go to, like at an association meeting, or if you have churches in your area that can come together and we could come do a training or something like that, is the easiest way for us to do it. But now, it is possible that we could work something out for someone to come and help with that. The church health assessment, this is a great thing. Every church leadership team should sit down and work through that together. It can be eye-opening. And it can help you. And as you identify some areas you're weak in, it keys back to a chapter in the book that will tell you, here's how you can work on that. And so again, a great resource to help you really evaluate, you know, where you're at and what you're doing. And it's a good way. A lot of times you've got people in church leadership that can kind of be like an anchor holding you back. You know what I mean? And this can be a good way to kind of open their eyes of like, oh, well, I hadn't thought about it. We do need to be working on that. And so that's a great resource to help. Anybody else?
David, are you able to share your PowerPoint?
I can. Let me give you my email address, and if you like it, just shoot me an email and I'll reply and send that to you. And it's very simple. It's my name, David, period, a dot, Womack, W-O-M-A-C-K, at randallhouse.com. David.womack at randallhouse.com. Be happy to send that. Thank you so much for coming. I hope this has been helpful for you. If there's any way we can help, feel free to call on us. We are the publishing house for our denomination. We exist to serve you. And we want to do that however we can. We want you to come by the booth, see what we've got there. Love to talk to you. Thank you so much for being here today.